And hello, people of the internet. How's it going today? How you doing? I'm Billy Bones, and this is A Walk Through the Mind, a moment where we can sit down, hang out, chit-chat, discuss a handful of ideas that have been bouncing around inside my head, and see if we can't take those ideas for ourselves and go out and get the conversation started with friends, family, the people we meet on the street, or maybe we just get those gears turning within our own heads and see where it takes us. So have you ever been described as left brain or right brain? And not in the political sense. Cast politics aside for today. No, this spawns from the 1940s through the 1960s, from research of an individual named Roger Sperry, when he was researching the two halves of the brain. While left brain people are, at least within the old-fashioned way of thinking, the medical science, the science of the brain, has come up vastly since I've been a child, obviously. And just trying to research the left and the right brain kind of situation, trying to look for the myth, was buried between, underneath everything else, not in between anything, in betwixt the particles of the brain itself, down memory lane, it seems, I guess. But if you were described as left-brained back in the day, you were described as logical, analytical, and detail-oriented, while the right-brained people were characterized as creative and intuitive, kind of broad swaths trying to figure out whether someone was an artist or excessively analytical in their sense of terms. And like I've said, science has come a lot further than where it was back in the day when I was still learning, when everybody was still learning how everything was kind of interacting, EKGs and EEGs and all this FRMI acronym soup going on, to learn all the processes that are going on. But one thing we knew back in the day, and the thing that's kind of really piqued my interest, something that kind of forgot about but remembered, is that each half of the brain actually controls the opposite side of the body. Something that's brought forth when people experience a stroke. Stroke is when a loss of blood flow to the brain, be it a clot or a burst capillary or artery or whatever there is, the blood vessel up in the brain, and the brain cells die. And people are able to see on the outside, not the people experiencing the stroke, but the people on the outside are able to see that, you know, if the right half of the brain has had a stroke, the left arm and the left leg, the left side of the mouth, the left eye, they don't blink, they don't move, they don't do what they're supposed to do. And the opposite happens with the left half of the brain, which controls the right half of the body. Kind of a weird little phenomenon, and where the nerves switch over at the back of the brain as they enter into the spinal cord. Kind of a weird feature. Those, again, what's going on here? And just kind of digging in, kind of figuring out how all of this is interconnected. I mean, this gray blob that's inside all of our skulls does a lot of work, does a lot of processing. And we don't even think about, we don't even realize that switch happens. But it's always so much more detailed when we look deeper into what the left hemisphere of the brain does. It does focus a lot more on speech, understanding language, abstract thinking. Within the process of vision, it registers the space between objects, you know, left and right, just kind of how close they are. Helps process with the logic and sequencing, linear thinking, mathematics, facts and thinking and words, all things that the left half of the brain does. The right side, the spatial imaging and thinking side of the brains, again, that I guess where we look at the creativity, how things are laid out in a three-dimensional space, not just the left and right, but how big that object is, how far forward or backward it has. But it also helps with the imagination, holistic thinking, intuition, arts, rhythm, nonverbal feelings, visualization, and daydreaming. But it's all kind of broad on most of that. And there is a level of redundancy in the brain. The brain, the left half, does not control all of the speech. The right half does not control all of the Vision. There is a crossover taken care of by the Corpus Callosum, handful of wires, for lack of a better term, that connect the left and the right brain. And this was kind of discovered back again in the 40s and 50s. The guy won the Nobel Prize in the 80s, just a couple decades worth of research, showing that there was a separation between the left and the right brain. One of the things that I've learned in this journey was his tests, the processes that he used in showing that there is a difference between what the left brain processes and the right brain processes. And it was made this, he started off with cats and monkeys. That's the other thing. Not everything has a split brain. Cats, monkeys, and humans share a split brain. A lot of other animals have solitary brains, and several others have multiple brains. Snails and slugs have 3. Leeches have over 20 all across their body. They obviously don't have the same number of neurons and synapses going on, bouncing around inside the head. But all brains are not equal, at least among the animal kingdom. But Roger Sperry, in his test, was trying to figure out what was going on with people suffering from epilepsy, seizures. And there was a process that they would do back in the day. They'd cut open the head and sever the corpus callosum to help mitigate the problem. And while I didn't dig into whether or not that actually helped the situation, oh, the science of the 1940s and 50s, oh, how old-fashioned they are. Hopefully they don't say that about us. But these people that had these wires between the left and the right brain severed in an attempt to help with their epilepsy kind of had other problems that appeared, but not necessarily in a grand scheme of things up until they were tested. I mean, we both have left and right eyes, and everything kind of goes in there, but it doesn't process the same. He was able to, with a series of experiments, split the vision of the participant, putting a piece of paper more or less down the middle between their eyes, flash a word on the right-hand side, and the left side of the brain would be able to interpret it. The individual would be able to say and write down the word, no problem. But if they flashed a word on the left-hand side, the right-hand side of the brain would interpret it. And if these wires were severed, they weren't able to articulate the word that they saw. But they were able to draw it. Kind of a weird little phenomenon. Flash a picture of a face or a house. Can't speak it, but yet you're able to draw it. Similar aspects where he would have individuals reach into a box with their non-dominant hand or the opposite hand. They'd flash a word, grab the hammer out of the box, and try and be able to grab which one they were looking for. Somehow it's not as easy when the wires are disconnected. And even with the wires connected, it can be a challenge. All the little things you don't know. But all these things, again, as we go back towards looking at strokes and the impact on the left and the right brain, when we have a stroke on the left-hand side, we have the problems with the language processing and speaking. We have problems with math, surprisingly. There's memory loss that's coming from the hippocampus all the way up front. And I guess a stroke is not designated to one little spot where all the brain cells kind of die off. Can be a broad section. Who knows how damaged the blood cells are. But again, continuing on with the left stroke on the left side, you get behavioral and personality changes. All of this is kind of making me think of soccer players or football players doing all the hits with their head, either bumping the ball as soccer players or crashing into tackling other individuals, getting your head bounced off the turf, the field. Think about all the microscopic blood clots that happen. You just scrape your knee or whatnot, you get a scab on your arm or your knee or whatever, and it flakes off and it goes away. But when the bruising happens inside the brain, there's only so far for that to go. When there's a stroke on the right-hand side, there's vision issues, again, with that aspect of what the right-hand side and left-hand side do. Memory loss, again, coming from that hippocampus, that front half. Visual, spatial awareness. Walking around, everything is all of a sudden in two dimensions. What a weird feeling that would be. And limited awareness of their body for a stroke on the right-hand side. Walking around, bumping into everything. I've been bumping into doorways every now and again. Does that mean I've got something going on in the right-hand side of my brain? Losing out on spatial awareness? Who knows? But again, not each side is dedicated to processes on all of those. There is a little bit of redundancy, so that way when things break down, at least the processing power between the two halves is evened out, shared upon the left and the right. But then when the power goes out on the left or the right, accordingly, the other half of the other hemisphere kicks in as long as those corpus callosum wires have not been cut. They're able to take up some of that burden. Got some extra RAM, extra processing power over there. Make something happen. Body's still alive. Got to keep it moving. Got to keep everything on track the best we can. And so this makes me think of a big fancy word called neuroplasticity, where it's how one trains the other half of the brain in hopes that the neurons start firing a little bit more smoother, where we build up a handful of extra neurons, extra pathways to make things a little bit more efficient. Drummers being the easiest example that come to my mind, having to control their left and their right hand, their left and their right foot at two different speeds and intervals to make all their fancy rhythm and drum beat sounds happen in the correct and appropriate timing. Timing alone, on top of that, keeping track of all that, that's a skill on its own. But simple enough things like brushing with your left hand, or some guy was talking about using the mouse with his left hand, or non-dominant hand, I guess should be the appropriate thing. Not everybody out there is a right-handed individual. We think about those people back in the day that were born left-handed, but being left-handed was a sin. So you had to write with your right hand. And there's theories, there's speculation that those who were forced to give up on their dominant hand to become proficient in their other hand actually closed off some of those wires, some of that neuroplasticity. They lost some of their creativity, lost some of their intuition, and it became damaging. And those that are ambidextrous from birth, proficient in the use of the left and right hand, somehow are more prone to ADHD. Is that where the corpus callosum, silly Latin words, are firing extra smooth and they can't balance out what's going on between the left and the right brain? Or are they just so far ahead of everybody else that what seems like ADHD is just their normal state of mind, but society says otherwise? Can't be that hyperactive, can't be that attuned into everything. Because, well, we all believe that we can multitask and do several things all at once very well. It's not possible. It's not true. Your brain only has 100% processing power, and you can only use a certain percentage of it at a time. You can spend 100% of your energy walking or running or reading a book, but you can't spend 100% walking and running and 100% reading a book. You got to do 50-50. And even with walking and running, you still have to pay attention to your surroundings. So now there's a drop in attention span right there. Or washing dishes and cooking food. You can mitigate. You can time. You can balance it out and say, I'm going to focus on dishes, and then I'm going to focus on cooking, and I'm going to focus on dishes. And then the kids start screaming in the other room, and then all of a sudden you can't pay attention to anything at all. Kind of goes in line with the cell phones and the talking on the road as you're driving. Spend too much energy focus on the phone, or at least holding the phone. Kind of weird when, in comparison, the people in the other part of the car can talk to you. It's not as distracting. There's probably some level of shared vibration that's going on instead of trying to talk into some digital receptor. But the brain is a muscle, and it is something that needs to be exercised. We just let it sit and veg out in a lackadaisical state where we're not learning, we're not challenging it, we're not trying to focus it. Kind of goes to waste, kind of melts into our brain, into our skull, out our ears, and becomes just a puddle of ooze. But if we can focus, keep on learning, we can build new neurons, new neural networks, new cells. We eat a healthy diet. Blast it full of sugar and chemicals. Start looking into that lion's mane, helping to rebuild cells. All those healthy, nutritious mushrooms make us a little bit more active in the mind. Feeding it the healthy proteins, not the complex carbohydrates, but the simple ones. Simple carbs, lots of proteins. Challenge ourselves, do the Sudoku, do the crossword puzzle. Try and build something from scratch. Draw out blueprints. Understand how things work. Get that deeper meaning. All in the aspect, all in the point, to just get those gears turning. To try and figure out what's next in the grand scheme of things and how we can build and understand and grow, not just by ourselves, but as a community. Global community, local community, or maybe just a home-based community where we can build these neural networks, the neuroplasticity not only between ourselves, our own left and right brains, but those in the greater aspect of ourselves. And I'm Billy Bones, B-I-L-L-Y-B-O-N, the number 3-S. You find me on Twitter, at Billy Bones. You find me on Mastodon, the Fediverse, at Billy Bones, at noagendasocial.com. I've got a website, billybones.com. You go there. Remember, spelled with a number 3 instead of an E. But you can go there. There's a link for email for longer diatribes of communication. There's links to shows and show notes. Holy show notes from Heck Batman. Got quite the collection. A little bit of redundancy, but who knows what's going on in 20 years when you first discover this podcast. Hopefully some of the links still work. There's a link for Tabletop Woodworks in case you need a little bit more value for value in exchange. I made some guitar hooks the other week, and then those sold out, so got more of those on the way. And what's this value for value that I speak of? I release this podcast free of charge, no advertisers, no sponsors, no paywall, in hopes that you find value in the effort, the value of the product that I put forth for you for free. And if you did find value, fantastic. I'm glad you did. Thank you. The first thing that I ask that you do is you give this show a share. Maybe someone else finds a talking point, gets the gears turning, and finds a path worth starting a conversation. But if you felt this show was worth a monetary amount of value, be that the U.S. dollar, Federal Reserve Freedom Units, as I like to call them, you go to the website, click the value for value button all the way down at the bottom. Take you to PayPal, you chip in, you donate, you support the show in a number that you feel is appropriate. Is that number 50 cents, a dollar, $20, $300? That is up for you to choose. But if you feel that I've earned money and you don't like the US dollar anymore and you want to pay me in Bitcoin, you're in luck. I take that as well. I take Satoshis through the new podcast apps. Go to podcastapps.com, get yourself a new podcast app. And you're able to stream Satoshis like today's executive producer, Sir Sean of the Allegheny Valley, streaming in 736 Satoshis. Pennies. Pennies. But he's helping. Thank you, Sir Sean. And thank you very much for everybody else for listening. I love you guys, and I'll talk to you next week.